Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man, where we like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
And today we're going to be talking to you about sports ball.
Sports ball.
Last we left you off in college football, we were at week two. We're now at week five, and the landscape has changed pretty dramatically for us in those 3 weeks.
I think by landscaping change, you mean cratered.
So week three, Texas A&M played New Mexico. So this was Zach Calzada's full game as quarterback. This was kind of all of us seeing, okay, now he knows he's going to be quarterback. He's gotten a week's worth of reps with a starting team, with the offensive line, with the rest of the playmakers on the team. Maybe he'll look better. And in general, they did. In general.
Yeah, this final score is 34-0. But, I mean, it's hard not to look good with the backdrop of a team like New Mexico.
New Mexico State, yeah. So we came out early, scored in the first two drives, and then we stalled in the next set of drives. And I got to be honest, most of our injuries were self-inflicted in this one. Mm-hmm. You know, overthrown passes. Calzada has a way of just throwing a ball to nowhere occasionally. Which is disconcerting.
And more often than not, missing the open man when he does throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do his reads very well.
Yeah. Our line's pretty leaky. New Mexico, you know, was able to get through on several occasions to provide pressure. You know, we scored a lot up front early and not much in the back, which is not stereotypical of us.
Right.
Normally it's the other way around, right? Well, we'll score in the first maybe one, maybe two drives, and then we kind of stall until third, fourth quarter, and then we just, you know, unleash on people typically after we've worn down their defense. That definitely has not been what we've seen. It was not what we saw in this game, and it's not what we saw going forward. The offense, there's problems. But, you know, it was a win, and coming off that, we were all kind of hopeful Calzada was going to play well.
Yeah, really the shining light from that was the defense and the fact that, you know, the defense didn't allow any points. And they shouldn't have. I mean, you know, again, New Mexico, University of New Mexico, they shouldn't have allowed any points, and they didn't. So the defense is looking pretty okay.
Yep.
They're just having to carry the weight of a bad offense because, like, our offense is pretty one-dimensional, you know. Mm-hmm. Spiller and A-Chain running the ball. Every once in a while, Weidemeyer, when Calzada can find him, will catch the ball.
And sadly, that's kind of like A&M writ large over the years. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of a jumble during the Sumlin years and the, I guess, the Sherman years and the Francione years and then the Jimbo years. The defense, before them, R.C. Slocum. So R.C. Slocum was head coach, I want to, 10, 15 years, a long time. Long, long, long time. And he was, you know, he got a winning, you know, we had a, you know, 9-5 or 8-4 or whatever. We had a winning record, but we never got to, you know, really big bowl games or championships or anything like that. And Slocum was the defensive coordinator under Jackie Sherrill, if I remember correctly. And so Slocum was all about defense. And that was very true. It was the wrecking crew, right? That was our defense. Mm-hmm. And that image started to kind of bleed off after Slocum got fired. And it's sort of come back in the Jimbo Fisher years as just having this really, really strong defense. But part and parcel of that in the Slocum years was our offense was awful. Right. Or not awful, but just not great. And so that's sort of the what we're sort of stepping into this year, it looked like, coming out of the Colorado game and then in this game. It was all about the defense. Going around the rest of the college football, the real big surprise was how close the Alabama-Florida game was. Alabama beat Florida 31-29.
That really probably shouldn't have been.
Well, Alabama came out really strong and then sort of petered off, and Florida did the opposite. They came out pretty weak and came in strong third quarter. It was a real close. It was a real struggle win for Alabama. And watching Alabama's other games coming into this, it kind of gave me the feeling that Alabama maybe wasn't Alabama this year. Mm-hmm. That they were not as good as they have been, not at least not as dominantly good as they have been in the past. The other news, at least in the SEC, was Georgia's win over South Carolina, 40-13. That was a very dominant win. And it sort of just showcased the fact that Georgia was going to be at least the team in the East, if not just the team, because of Alabama's struggle over Florida, you know, only winning by 2 points. It kind of, to me, that sort of keyed me into maybe Georgia's better than Alabama this year. It also made me kind of feel like Alabama may, because of how many teams in the West and the SEC West were ranked, that maybe the SEC West was just going to be beating each other up and we were going to end up with a bunch of 2-loss teams and nobody going to the college football playoffs. Whereas Georgia was probably going to go at least to the SEC championship, probably going to win that, and then they would get in. So, you know, from that perspective, at least in week three, it was looking to me like Georgia was going to be the SEC team that goes to the playoffs and maybe nobody else.
Right. Well, the way it's starting to shape up now.
Cincinnati beat Indiana, which, you know, Cincinnati's just kind of proved it's a good team. Big upset from that week was Penn State over Auburn. Interestingly enough, Penn State went in there ranked 10, and Auburn, well, no. Yeah, both teams were ranked. I don't know what they were ranked at the time. Auburn went up to Penn State, if I remember correctly, but Auburn was still picked to win by most sportscasters. And Penn State ends up winning 28-20. It was a fairly balanced game. Penn State basically scored one touchdown per quarter. Auburn scored once per quarter, and two of those were field goals instead of touchdowns. But a lot of people thought, you know, Penn State being a Big Ten team and Auburn being an SEC team, that, you know, that Auburn was just going to go in there and wreck Penn State's world, and it did not turn out that way. And instead, Penn State put up a real fight. So this was more of what we saw in week two, was sort of the Pac-12 asserting their, hey, we're not just a blow-off conference. And this was kind of the Big Ten's week to do that.
Or at least for the Big Ten to say, hey, we're not just Ohio State.
Right. And you also saw that with Michigan State beating Miami. Oh, that was much more, that was 38-17. Michigan State kind of batted around Miami, sort of a mean way. Arkansas's week three game was...
Well, Arkansas's week three was against Georgia.
Georgia Southern. So, yeah, Arkansas's big game was week two.
Against Texas.
And they manhandled Texas, like 40-something to 20-something.
40-21.
And so coming out of that, they looked pretty good. And obviously they looked good against Georgia Southern. Again, Georgia Southern. Not like they're playing Georgia or anything. So coming into this game, there are a lot of talk because Arkansas has a pretty good defense. So do we. There's a lot of thoughts that this was going to be a fairly low-scoring game. If we could stop the run on offense, we'd probably be able to stop them from scoring points. If they could stop the run on us, it might be the same way. It was sort of, there was a lot of question marks. Does Calzada have his head screwed on straight yet? Are we going to be able to do this? And coming out, basically very early, it looked like the answer was a solid no. You know, Arkansas controlled the game. There was kind of a brief glimmer of hope in the third quarter. We managed to score a touchdown. We had a decent drive going. We had a lot of penalties that killed drives in the third and fourth quarter. It basically caused us to march the ball, you know, be like first and 20 or first and 25 or something like that. And the honest truth is Calzada's pretty awful so far at throwing the ball long. He has a tendency to throw it way too long, or just too long. And the way Arkansas runs its defense is called an umbrella defense. So what they do is they rush three, and then they play with everybody else in the backfield. So it's difficult to find open men. It can happen. Not saying it doesn't happen. But it's difficult to play a passing game against that kind of defense unless you have a really good quarterback who's really accurate and can think on his feet. And the problem is Calzada is not. He can be really accurate and he can think on his feet, but he doesn't do it enough. The other problem is he flushed himself out of the pocket constantly. The reality is Arkansas rushing three against our five. Granted, our five aren't like amazing. Our O-line's not great, but there were several times where he came out of the pocket and he didn't need to.
Right, but that's because he has no faith in our O-line. I mean,
right.
That's why he gets flushed out like a scared rabbit very easily, and that's because he doesn't have an O-line to protect him.
Yeah. So, you know, Arkansas just effectively was dominant over the game. It wasn't a huge loss. It was 20-10. So we're not talking, you know, it's not 50-10. It's not like, you know, 40-20 or anything. 20-10. But like I said, it was primarily a defensive game. It was about who could get those three and outs and who could get those big plays, those big offensive plays, because that's effectively what Arkansas was able to get.
Well, especially on third down, like the third down is your quintessential down. Like if you're trying to, you know, make it as a quarterback, that is the time to step up. And if you can't make it on third down, if you can't even at least make the third down manageable, and it doesn't look like Calzada can do that. And he's constantly in the position of like third and five or greater. And that's just not sustainable.
Yeah. Well, it plays directly against Fisher's. The way he wants to run his offense. Because the way Fisher wants to run his offense is ball control. He wants to go to third down every down.
Right.
He wants to slowly move the ball, get 4 to 5 yards every play, and keep the other team's defense on the field as long as possible.
Right.
He has not been able to do that. He just hasn't because, like you said, if you're third and long constantly, then you're not going to convert on third. If everything you're calling and everything you're running in practice is 4 to 5 yards, then when you find yourself in third and long, you're not going to convert. And that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing non-conversions.
Right. And, you know, in the particular case of Calzada, it's really hard to make to have a third down play call system if you are constantly missing your reads, if you're constantly overthrowing, and your only sustainable way of making any sort of yardage is your running backs and the rush game. Then, you know, on third down, they know what you're going to do. They just have to go into light pass coverage and try to force you to run it, and then they'll box you in.
The other thing I want to talk about is this was played in a neutral zone, which is a neutral field. So it wasn't played in Arkansas. It wasn't played in Fayetteville. It wasn't played at College Station. It was played in Dallas or in Arlington at Jerry's World.
Which is done every year.
Not every year. Last year it was actually played at A&M.
Oh.
Yeah, so they're it's I think a 5 to 10 year contract every time, and so I think it was up. That and the whole no fans, everything, COVID was making everything weird, so.
Oh, that makes sense.
They were back this year. But that means it's half Arkansas, half Aggies in the stands, because it's about equidistant from the two schools. There's a very important morale role that quarterbacks play. The entire team can fold or get back up if a quarterback can kind of lead them in a morale space. And Calzada is not projecting that leadership quality, and he's not projecting confidence, and he is... Fear is not quite the right word, but that's the closest word I can get to it. It's sort of this combination of fear and non-confidence. It's fear of failure, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's what he projects. And so the little bit of hope that we had in the third quarter just sort of collapsed once we had, you know, once we had a three and out. And then after that, into the fourth quarter, it was, you know, everybody was pretty much hopeless. And everybody could, it was palpable. You could feel it. The team looked the way. The entirety of the offense looked that way. The fans looked that way. Everybody at home felt that way.
Well, you know, and I'm thinking back on it and all the videos that I see of Jimbo Fisher on the sideline and whatnot. And, I mean, a big thing that you see in his face is like, because, you know, we've seen Jimbo Fisher get animated when things go wrong. He hasn't really been that with this kid. And I get the impression that the reason why that is because that he knows that if he yells at him, he's just going to break down and cry on the sideline. And then he's got no quarterback. So he's like, well, I want to yell at this kid. I really want to yell at this kid, but I don't have any other options, you know, so I got to keep him in the game.
Yeah.
That might sound mean or insulting, but I mean, that's honestly, because like if you've seen Jimbo Fisher animated, he can get really angry and hopped up and try to get his guys in the game. But Calzada, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have that sort of stalwartness that you would need, you know, for big moments.
I think a lot of it is experience-based, which you'll see in training and in practice games and in the, like the maroon and white game or whatnot, is Jimbo will be a lot more like all over experienced guys, juniors, seniors, that kind of stuff, than he will against the less experienced guys. And I mean, Calzada is just less experienced. So I think that's part of it. What I will say is the defense kept playing, which was, to me, was the most impressive thing about that game from our side of the ball. Or, you know, for A&M's team, is the defense kept playing. We only let them score 3 points in the second half. You know, we didn't let them score at all in the third quarter. They only scored 3 points. So, you know, we kept putting up stops, even despite the fact that all the morale was gone and there was no hope on the offense. The defense kept playing, and that's a real credit to the defense, I think.
Oh yeah, we got a very good defense, and a lot of those guys, if they're seniors, are probably going to get drafted, you know, next year.
So it was a very disappointing game. It was our first loss. It kind of took the win. Anybody who still had kind of hopes of running the West, or you know, maybe still going to the college playoffs, it kind of took the sail out of almost everybody on that one.
Yep.
You know, we were ranked number 7 going into that game. Arkansas was ranked number 16. We kind of flipped coming out of that. Uh-huh. I think we were ranked 15 after that, and Arkansas was ranked 8.
Yep.
Other things that happened around the college football world, Clemson got beat by North Carolina State 27-21. So it was a fairly close game, but it was kind of a showcase that, no, Clemson is just not very good this year. They went into that ranked 9. I think they came out ranked 22 or something like that. Oklahoma only beat West Virginia by 3 points. It was 16-13. So Oklahoma went into that game ranked 4. I don't think they were in the top 5 anymore after that game. Wake Forest is slowly becoming the dominant team in the ACC. So, and the fact that you've probably never heard of Wake Forest tells you something about the ACC. The ACC is where Clemson comes from, just so you're aware. So, yeah.
Yeah, their brief shining moment of prosperity of dominance is just pretty much gone, especially with, you know, Trevor Lawrence going to the Jaguars and them just, you know, stinking to high hell.
So unlike the Big Ten and the Pac-12 who are trying to showcase, hey, we're real, you know, conferences, the ACC is sort of going the other way. Big news in the SEC, Georgia beat Vanderbilt 62-0. Which just seems mean to me.
Right.
I mean, it's like beating the crap out of your little brother.
At some point, don't you just go, guys, just need a ball. But we still got like a whole another quarter to play. Yeah, just, you know, punt it away, man. Just punt it away.
Yeah, just punt it away. So, you know, on the other side of this, so the matchup that was similar to this in the Big Ten is Penn State versus Villanova. And Penn State only beat Villanova 38-17. Right. That sort of showcases, like, you know, Penn State, oh, we beat Auburn and everything. And I'm like, yeah, you're still not really SEC quality. You only beat your cakewalk team, Villanova, by 20 points, whereas Georgia beat our cakewalk team by 62. Georgia. So, you know, Georgia just kind of showcasing that it's awesome. Florida beat Tennessee. Yeah, big whoop. Notre Dame beat Wisconsin. So, That was in the favor of Notre Dame. Notre Dame, you know, I still think they're massively overranked, but they did beat Wisconsin, which was a ranked team. They beat them pretty handily, 41-13. Good old Michigan State beating Nebraska.
Michigan State versus Nebraska, that's just like an old-timey, you know, good old football game where nothing's on the line. Just two decent college teams duking it out.
Yep. So UCLA beat Stanford. The reason this is interesting is because UCLA beat LSU and because of what Stanford's going to do in week 5. And we'll get to that. Stanford, in my opinion, is amazing. It's the only win from week 5 I was happy about. The entirety of week 5 was just awful for me. The entirety of it. I mean, from every perspective, it was a bad day. Totally. LSU ends up beating Mississippi State, which was surprising. Because LSU looked pretty awful this year. Mississippi State not looking great, but seemingly better than LSU. And this is LSU. This is a second half game. LSU manages to put up a lot of points in the third quarter. Mississippi State puts up a lot of points in the fourth quarter, but LSU managed to get a touchdown in the first half, and Mississippi State only managed to get a field goal. So LSU beat Mississippi State 28-25. That was a very close game. That was played, if I remember correctly, it was played at Mississippi State, because I don't think that was in Death Valley, because they played Auburn this week in Death Valley. So, and Death Valley is the name of the LSU stadium. Why they call it Death Valley, I don't know. So, something about it never rains. I think that's why. And it has not rained on college game day, you know, on Saturday during a game for, like, forever.
Mm-hmm. The actual Death Valley is in California, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think so. Texas destroyed Texas Tech in the Big 12, 70-35. So literally double what Texas Tech put up. Every time Texas had the ball, they gave it to Bijan Richardson. Is it Bijan Richardson? I want to say Bijan Watson. It's not Watson. It's Bijan Richardson. They've got a running back, and he's really good. He is. I'll give it to him. I hate the team and everything about them, but they do have one really good running back, and he acted like a really good running back. Every time they gave the ball to him, he basically scored. So this was more of a display of Tech being just a terrible, terrible team than it was Texas being an amazing team, because of what happened earlier against LSU and or against Arkansas, and what's going to happen in week 5 against TCU. Miami destroyed Central Connecticut 69-0. Oh, yeah. Kentucky beat South Carolina. In the SEC East, there's two teams that are considered somewhat cakewalks. Actually, there's three teams that are considered somewhat cakewalks. Vanderbilt, obviously, Missouri, and then Kentucky. So it was a little bit surprising seeing South Carolina get beat by Kentucky. This is mostly due to the fact that South Carolina's coaching staff is in just a huge amount of disarray after last year's like random firings. And so I don't expect the Gamecocks to be good for a while now. And they were not good enough that one of our basketball teams in the conference, their football team, beat them. So Colorado got beat by Arizona State 35-13. So but that was week 4. So disappointing week. A&M lost. Texas won. So bad week all around.
From a Texas point of view.
Yeah. Going into week 5, it was sort of a, okay, can we bounce back? Can Texas A&M bounce back? Because we have Mississippi State. Mississippi State just came off a loss from LSU. So obviously having problems because LSU looks awful. Mississippi State's not looking very good. Most people thought, hey, this is probably a win. The statistics I saw put it at like a 70% chance that we would beat them, or close to that. That it was going to be a close game. We were only going to beat them by like 7 or less, but that we would win. And I think primarily that was in part because it was a home game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a home game. Plus, at this point, you know, Calzada's got a few games under him. Jimbo Fisher's had a few weeks to kind of coach him up. And so the idea is not having to travel, being home again, and hopefully the mindset of Calzada is like, I've got to be that much better in order to keep leading this team. So, yeah, that was the hope.
Yep. You know, I think our first drive really says it all. We went 2 plays and then threw an interception.
No, one play.
No, we had one play before that.
No, it was a kickoff and it was the first pass.
It was the first pass. We ran before that.
Couldn't have been for more than maybe a couple of yards then.
No, it wasn't. But yeah, threw an interception. That's just sort of how the game went. Mississippi State went down and scored. We went down and scored. They went down and kicked a field goal. It was like our defense from the last 4 games was kind of just not there. Now, granted, we had not played a Mississippi State is kind of built to be a passing offense, like just flat out. They barely ever run the ball. I think they ran like 4 running plays total. So everything they do is passing. And it showcased a real limit on our defense that we could not stop the pass until we got to the red zone. And in the red zone, we did pretty well. We put up a lot of stops in the red zone, but that just results in field goals, typically. We got lucky. Mississippi State missed a couple of those. But the defense just didn't, they did not look anything like they did in the past 4 games. They weren't a dominant force. They weren't something you really had to, they were getting out-coached very handily. Uh-huh. And, you know, anytime we tried to put pressure on the quarterback, he was able to get the ball out. Anytime we stopped putting pressure on the quarterback, he was still able to get the ball out. And his guys were able to get 3 or 4 yards or 10 or 20 yards, depending on His receivers were good. His completions were good. He looked like everything looked like it was clicking for Mississippi State's offense, and nothing looked like it was clicking for A&M's defense. And that's kind of one-sided. The honest truth is we put up a lot of stops. Even in the fourth quarter, they would have scored no points if it hadn't been for the offense.
Well, in particular, too, I mean, even when we get the stops and we get the ball back, is nothing would generally come out of our offense. So when the defense did come back on, it's just demoralizing, you know, especially since the way that it started off with the interception. And they got it back with short field, and you were able to keep them to a field goal. That should still be, I mean, because like you said, it was the second play of the game. Mississippi State had fantastic field position to start off their first possession, and we limited them to a field goal. That should be, you know, pretty morale raising. But then you come back and you don't get anything for that.
No, we did. We came back and got a touchdown.
We got a touchdown after that one?
That's when the game still looked manageable.
Right.
So the first quarter, it looked, but it was like the slow, and it was exactly the kind of thing that Jimbo tries to do to other teams that Mississippi State did to us. It was the slow wearing down of the offense and the defense. And you could see kind of how tired our defense was. I mean, they were still putting up stops because I think Mississippi State's offense was also getting tired. On the offensive side of the ball, we just couldn't finish. The run game looked pretty good. We were able to get down the field. We were able to move the ball. But once we got into the red zone or in, you know, within 30, we just couldn't finish. We got to third down and we couldn't convert. And so it ended up being, you know, two field goals in the second, another two field goals in the third quarter, and then a single field goal in the fourth quarter. Compared to Mississippi State, it was getting touchdowns. They got a touchdown in the second. They got a touchdown in the third quarter. They didn't score in the fourth quarter except for the safety.
Right.
Which, Mississippi State's defense was fairly on point. You know, they were mostly rushing three guys. Calzada actually looked a little better in the pocket than he had been, but his
confidence in the pocket was better, but you could still tell that when he was trying to throw, he was trying to overthrow for some reason.
Yeah, he overthrew a lot.
There was like a nervous energy of like, I got to get this all the way out there, you know?
Yeah. Well, one touchdown pass he threw was brilliant.
Right.
You know, normally Calzada throws these bullets that are just, they move at a massive rate and they're good. They're really good at certain times and certain time frames, but it's not always. And so he threw this kind of sail ball into the back of the end zone, back corner, and our guy went out and caught it. You know, Smith. That was fantastic. That was amazing. It was like, oh my gosh, he can actually do this. You know, there was a lot of hope there in the first quarter, but it never repeated.
Right.
Anytime he tried to throw anything that was long or up there, it was too long or too far or just way out there.
When those things weren't working for him, then it was like he kind of reverted back to these where he would miss the reads, he'd miss the open guy, and he would run out of the pocket and either throw it away or try to gain a few yards himself or something like that. When he'd gain a few yards, it's great, or that touchdown that he eventually got himself, but you got to be able to find the open guy. You know, you either got to slow down the readings or start reading better or something, but he's just not... It's not like he's committed to the passing game.
Yeah, that's right. In the third quarter, it was not two field goals. It was a touchdown. We went for the 2-point conversion and didn't get it.
Right. That was the one time that you actually saw Jimbo Fisher mad at Calzada, because he had to take a timeout before doing the 2-point conversion because Calzada, I guess, thought they were going to go for a field goal. And Jimbo Fisher's like, no, what are you doing? Get back out there. You know? And he was mad because he didn't have the situational awareness to know that you had to go for two and you had to get that playoff.
Yep. Very close game throughout the entire game. Nobody really got ahead of anybody else, or, you know, Mississippi State was ahead the whole game. Mm-hmm. They never got further than a touchdown away.
We were talking about that 2-point conversion. I got to tell you, that is another one of those things that kind of makes you wonder, how is it that Calzada was the backup? Like, how did this kid get to this level? Because A&M being part of the SEC, they have to have a pretty high standard for the players that they recruit. And I understand he was a backup and he's brought in before his time, but at this level, you kind of already have to have that sort of mentality there.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of questions. A lot of people are asking that same questions, like, why was this guy our number two?
Mm-hmm.
Was he just that much better in practice than he's turning out in actual play? And are we stuck with him now? Because that was the bet we made.
Right. Practice versus, you know, an actual game is kind of like the difference between playing the computer and playing a real opponent.
Right. It did showcase the fact that when we can get the run